Okay, thank you all for being here. Couple of things. One, it says parenting in a secular age. I would not consider this class a parenting class because I don't consider myself a parenting expert. Like, I have a 5-year-old and 2-year-old twins. And so I am like figuring out the parenting thing. But what this class is specifically going to discuss is spiritually forming our children, Generation Z, in a secular age. And so from a parenting perspective, from a spiritual formation perspective, that's going to be what we look at. We're going to talk about parenting things, and we're going to talk about development. But when we get to those things, those will be experts that will be talking to us through statistics and different things. So I just want you to know that. I'm really excited about this topic. Generation Z is something that I have spent the last 3 years pretty deep in research, trying to figure out this generation. For a big reason is because I want to try to do the parenting thing the best that I can. Most importantly, want to spiritually form my children the best way I can. So I've dug into that research. And two, I'm an educator, and so I work with kids all the time. I'm the president at Oklahoma Christian Academy, and so these kids are in my life every day. And so we're asking questions, how do we best form them? When we talk about Generation Z, researchers have a couple of different starting dates, birth dates for Generation Z. Some researchers will say 2001 is a birth year. And they like that date because of 9/11, and they like to do generational cohorts around huge crises, right, or big life events. And so 9/11 gives us a 2001 date. Other researchers started in 1995. When I was doing my dissertation, I used 2001, and I think I was justified in doing that with research. Since then, I'm starting to shift a little bit to the 1995 date, and we'll discuss why kind of throughout this course is why I think that is. It doesn't really matter at all, really. If they're Generation Z in 1995, some will call them young millennials. It doesn't matter, but there's a pretty big difference between those born after 1995 and kind of the true more millennials, the mid-80s millennials. There's quite a bit of difference and quite changed in technology in the late 90s, and so we'll talk more about that. I also am sending around a sheet to get your email address. You don't have to do that. I'm not selling your data or anything. But I am going to send, if you put your email on there, I'm going to send you a survey. So I'm going to ask some certain questions that I think will be beneficial for us to see. Kind of, here's what the class thought about some of these things. So that's one reason. And then the other reason in the survey, I'm going to ask for questions. And so maybe you have spiritual formation questions or parenting questions, and I can try to weave those questions into this series. I'm going to be here most of the time. I'm not going to be here a couple of times. But I gave you a list of courses so you can kind of see topics that we'll be discussing throughout this quarter. I will not be here next week, but Dr. Chansey will be here. So he's going to kind of go over some history of youth ministry and really talk about when in the church did we kind of start outsourcing spiritual formation to the church. We haven't always outsourced spiritual formation, but we did. And what are the implications to that, to really having youth ministries and huge children's ministries? And how might we go back to parents doing more of the owning of faith development at home? So that's what Dudley's going to talk about next week. I really enjoy the parenting theology. I think that's really interesting. And I think we have a parenting theology as Christians, not specific to this church, but just a broad sense, that is really harming our children. And so we're going to talk about what is that parenting theology and how is it harming our children, and how might that change. And then we'll do some technology stuff because we always like to know and stay up with trends in technology. The faith climate one is my favorite class that we're going to do. What is the faith climate? So, yeah, we want to spiritually form our kids, but we kind of need to know the context of what we're living in to know how to form them. And so that's what that is. The Pixar generation is a really interesting about how technology and Pixar has shaped minds and brainwaves, and how that has impacted theology and some of the spiritual implications that we're seeing. Kind of our priority in parenting is that next one. Where are we putting our focuses and what impacts is that having? Talk about formation, the formative pyramid. How do we specifically form kids and what does that look like? And then November is panel discussions. And the November might change based on the survey I send you, based on what questions you have. But this is where I want to bring in some experts to talk about specific things. So technology will be one, maybe bringing in some older people in our church that have already gone through the raising of kids and ask them questions. And then specifically the Gen Z theology. There has been a lot on Generation Z. Like if you go into Barnes & Noble and look on the shelves, you're going to see quite a bit of research on Generation Z. You've seen a lot on millennials. The Gen Z stuff's just kind of coming into the bookshelves. But most of what you have heard is how bad Generation Z is, or the statistics on Generation Z. And we haven't seen a lot of either why are we seeing the outcomes we're seeing? We're not seeing much on that, and we're not seeing, okay, so what? And so my research has focused predominantly on why, because I feel like if we can figure out, well, why are we seeing the theological implications or the spiritual implications or the emotional implications? If we know why, maybe that will help us create some strategies to do this thing better. And so that's what I want to spend this quarter talking about, except for tonight. Tonight I want to lay the groundwork of the statistics so we're all on the same page and we all know kind of what we're working with, if that makes sense. This is my family. We go to church here. We're First Service Christians. We sit on the front row. So we are like the best First Service Christians. I have three kids, 5-year-old son Sawyer and 2-year-old twin daughters, and that's my wife Megan. We're in the foundations class. Let's watch this real quick as we start.
Thank you. series of effective missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island.
Video does a pretty good job of kind of laying the groundwork historically on what generations have experienced. In some of my research, I came across this article named A Flapper's Appeal to Parents. And it's an article written by Ellen Page. And it's a, you can Google it, Ellen Page, Flapper's Appeal, and you can read the letter. But in this, she has this quote. You parents and grandparents and friends and teachers and preachers, all of you. The war, you cry? It's the effect of the war. And then you blame prohibition. Yet it is you who set the example there. But this is my point. Instead of helping us work out our problems with constructive and sympathetic thinking and acting, you have muddled them for us more hopelessly with your destructive public condemnation. Okay. Why is this fascinating to me? This was written in 1922. A high school kid could write this today to us and say the same exact thing. Right? I mean, how many times have we seen stuff on social media just bashing the millennials and how bad the millennials are, which I'm a recovering millennial myself. I get up every morning and I make it work. All right, so I understand millennials have kind of given us a bad rap, right? But we kind of have this idea that as older generations, we kind of look down on the younger generation. And one of the things that we do, and this is a thing researchers do quite often, is they blame generational outcomes on cultural events, right? And so they will say things like, this generation has experienced all of these things, right? Like, and even like the difference between me as a millennial and a 12-year-old today, right? They have experienced some things that I didn't experience. Like, I don't remember watching riots on television as a kid, like race riots, like people like going, you know, like I don't remember the black and white battles playing out on television when I was growing up that a 10-year-old might see today, right? So they are actually experiencing some things, in racial tensions and sexual identity, and they're experiencing some things that even I didn't experience that long ago. But I don't blame cultural events for the outcomes, and we're going to talk about the outcomes. But I don't blame cultural events for them because almost every generation has experienced the same stuff. Like, that's why I like that video, right? Like, other generations have experienced racism, like really bad racism. Other generations have experienced war. In fact, other generations have 15-year-olds as officer cadets in war. Right? Other generations have had financial crisis with the Great Depression. Other generations have had White House scandal. Right? Like, other generations have experienced the same stuff these current generations are, yet the generational outcomes are significantly different. So while I do believe culture is always forming us, and I don't want to be naive to the fact that we are being formed every day and by what we see and what we experience that forms us, there's got to be some deeper undertones going on as to why our kids are experiencing the things that they're experiencing. Right, so let's talk about what they're experiencing. I like to put them in three buckets: emotional, spiritual, and developmental. Right, so those are kind of the things that we're going to talk about today. From an emotional and developmental perspective, a 2013 survey of college counseling directors showed 95% of college counselors believe that the growing number of students on campus with psychological problems is of great concern. Church of Christ president, not this one here, a different one. I was visiting with him recently, and he told me that they had a NCAA president's meeting. It was a typical NCAA president's meeting, and it was supposed to be about athletics, yet the entire conversation was around psychological issues on college campuses. The whole meeting was about. So this president went back to his campus and went to the counseling offices and said, hey, what have we seen? And his counseling office said, over the last 2 years, we've seen a 92% increase in counseling services offered on campus. Now, we could break that down all day as to reasons. You know, some of that could be very healthy, right? Like, we now live in a society where it's healthy to talk about things we're struggling with, right? So we could come at it, and we should come at it with some health views, right? But we also need to look at, okay, well, what's going on? What's the stress and anxiety that's going on in these kids' lives, and why are they experiencing so much stress and anxiety? I like this. This is Dr. Tim Elmore. We are seeing an extinction of childlikeness and an extension of childishness, right? So, let's see if this... Yeah, here we go. Nationwide survey of 18 to 25-year-olds, 16% felt they were adults. 16% of 18 to 25-year-olds felt that they were adults. It's kind of this extension of childishness, right? We're really not hitting adulthood till 30s or so. 50 to 70%, depending on what survey you look at, of college graduates are moving back home with their parents. So a lot of reasons for that too, but it's interesting. Another interesting one, nationwide study of 12 to 26-year-olds, only 20% were able to articulate purpose and meaning. Only 20%. So this one we're going to talk a lot about because there's theological implications to this one, big time, from a parenting perspective on helping kids find meaning and purpose. But it's that kind of that extension of childishness. But when we talk about the extinction of childlikeness, I like this chart a whole lot. And so we have things in early childhood that we do too much of right now, right? So in early childhood, we have too much structural organization, too much information, too much responsibility in early childhood, right? Pre-kindergarten. You can count kindergarten if you're a kindergarten teacher. Okay. Pre-first grade, all right? Way too much of this. Now, too little... freedom and space, innocence, and independent exploration. Way too little of it, right? Did you know that today there is a 0.01% chance your child will be abducted in America? 0.01% chance your child will be abducted in America. Now we act like there's like a 90% chance that my kid's going to be abducted from my neighborhood, right? Like television tells us, like, you know, radar's high. But it's interesting how media scares us into some parenting behavior that probably is proving negative consequences on us. Adolescence, we have too much freedom and space, too much independence and too much passive stimulation. Yes, sir.
What's the source of that, Brandon? I mean, what's the base, the underlying...
Of our desire to protect?
Well, no, but how do we know, for example, has there been a study or studies that say, is this anecdotal...
For this chart?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to talk, well, I'll bring some studies up. Yeah. We have too much freedom and space, too much independence, and too much passive stimulation, and too little responsibility, too little accountability, and too little meaningful activities and work. This right here is where we're going to spend the majority of our parenting theology discussion, right here. The first use, do you, anybody know the first use of the term teenager? First use of the term teenager was 1941 in a Reader's Digest article. 1941 was the first time the word teenager was used. That is because, really up until mid-30s to early 40s, there was no such thing as it. Like, that subpopulation didn't exist in culture. Right? Like, Paul doesn't say, when I was a child, I thought like a child, I acted like a child, and then I became a teenager, and I kind of still acted like a child, and then I became a... He doesn't say it, right? It's like, when I was a child, I thought like a child, and then when I became a man, I gave up childish ways. Like, there was no subpopulation. You were working, right? You were married. So this is a new cultural phenomenon. Our kids, essentially having a vacation from any responsibility for 18 years, is a very new thing for society. And we're starting to witness the consequences, and I'm starting to get into some of the theology stuff. Okay. One of the ways that I like to anecdotally share this is, when I was a kid, I played with Legos. Like, I bought Legos and I played with Legos. Like, I wasn't good. I'm not an engineer. I'll never be close to being an engineer. But I just played and built stuff with Legos. Now you buy Legos and they tell you how to use your Legos. Like, there's a picture and there's instructions, and this is how you build the ship, right? And so even when you think about early childhood toys, we're starting to see developmentally some of the consequences of those things. Any comments about this? This is, we could talk probably all class period about this chart in itself.
Is this presentation available anywhere?
It is not, but I will charge you $15.99. The recording will be, but I can email it to you. Yeah. I do this all over, probably twice a month. I'm somewhere in the United States doing something like this, and I will caution you, I feel bad about this. Usually that's in like a 3-hour setting, and so like this presentation, this specific one, is kind of sandwiched with like really positive stuff at the end. But tonight there's no positive stuff, so I am sending you home tonight, like, and you're going to feel like my kid's going to hell. Like, there's like, statistically, my kid is going to hell. All right, we're going to get to some positive stuff, I promise. All right, parenting Generation Z. A 2011 study, this is what we're going to get into some of your studies here. 2011 study from University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, found that students with hovering or helicopter parents were more likely to take medication. Their students were more likely to take medication for anxiety, depression, or both. There was a study done in 1973, and it's actually a dissertation. You can actually read it. It's quite fascinating. Where a doctoral student moved to a small town to do his dissertation. And what he wanted to study was parental expectations and rules for their children and how they function in the city. Like, he wanted a kind of a geographical study of parenting and kids, which is fascinating. And what he found in kind of the short is that there were certain ages that kids were allowed to do certain things and go farther and farther distances, right? So like, an 8-year-old was allowed to go down the street, but by the time they were 10, they were allowed to ride their bike to the gas station, right? And then when they became 13,
they could go here, and when they became, you know, they could drive here. And so there was like very distinct boundaries based on age on how a kid could function within his city, right? And you might have grown up in a situation that was like that. Then somebody, this guy stayed in psychology, is kind of a leading scholar, stayed kind of in this scope of work. And a younger scholar went to him and said, hey, what if we tried to replicate the study? This is 2014. What if we tried to replicate the study? So he went back to the same town, and he wanted to find the kids that were still there that he studied, and he wanted to see how they were raising their kids in the geographical boundaries. He couldn't even replicate the study. Like, he couldn't even visit with kids without the parents sitting there with him. Right? And so, like, the stronghold of protection was so strong, the study had no chance to be replicated. We're going to talk a lot about that in the theology piece, about what implication that's having on our kids. I like these. This is four huge parenting mistakes. This is stuff done by Dr. Tim Elmore. I like a lot of his stuff. If you want to read a parenting book, read Artificial Maturity by Dr. Tim Elmore. It's not specifically a parenting book, but it's the best parenting book I've read. Artificial Maturity by Tim Elmore. But he talks about these four things. The first one is, as parents, we risk too little. We risk too little. Kind of this protection narrative, right? We want to protect. We want to be good parents. We want to. I'll give you an example of this. I go to. I should have brought a video. If you follow me on Instagram, you already know this silly story. We have a girl at our school that's a barrel racer, right? And she's a good barrel racer. And so I took my 5-year-old to watch her barrel race. We have an Edmond Youth Rodeo every weekend in the summertime. So it's fun to go to if you want to go be a cowboy. And before the barrel racing, there's bull riding, youth bull riding. And so I'm sitting there with my son, and they're like, all right, 16 to 18 bull riding. And these kids go out there and, you know, break their bones and all this kind of stuff. And then the guy's like, all right, 14 to 16 smaller bull riding. Right? And so these 14-year-olds get out on these smaller bulls. And he's like, all right, 10 to 13 steer riding. And then it's like 7 to 10 calf riding. And then they got like 3 to 7 sheep riding. I went like what they put the 2-year-olds on is crazy, you know. But my son goes, Dad, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, your mom is going to kill me. Like, right? We got this protection thing going on, right? Like, no, I'm not going to put my kid on a sheep. Right? Which is just only in Oklahoma. It's not only in Oklahoma do we put kids on sheep. So but another book that I have read is Raising a Modern Day Knight. It's an older book. It's another really good book for raising boys. And one of the things he says in there is that for boys specifically, we need to raise boys that lead courageously, accept responsibility, expect a greater reward, lead courageously, accept responsibility, expect a greater, and reject passivity. Reject passivity. So that's always playing in the back of my mind with my kids. And so I'm like, this might be an opportunity to reject passive, right? Because he's kind of timid in nature, right? So we go home, and I tell my wife, I'm like, hey, next week, Sari wants to participate. And she's like, well, what does that mean? And I'm like, well, there's like this thing, and like you just like you put them on a sheep, and you ride them, right? And she's like, anyways, we do it the next week. Right? I won the battle. Right? So we get there and put a helmet on him, and put a jacket on, like this vest, like this protective vest, a protective helmet. And like we're there, and there's all these other people there, and I'm like standing on the bull chute, and these other dads are getting in the chute and like getting the sheep, and I guess I just assume that like
there was a volunteer cowboy to do that. Nobody said, hey, there's parental expectations here. Right? But before this, going back to we risk too little, this is what made me think of it. I actually had a sign a form that says, if the sheep kills your 5-year-old, don't sue me. Right? And so I'm like, that's probably the worst parenting move I've ever made. But I signed it. Anyways, we're there, and I'm like, what's going on? How am I going to, I have to get in there. And so then I crawl down in there, and there's like all these chutes, if you didn't know anything about rodeo. And I'm in this chute, and the sheep's in that chute. And so the cowboys, or whatever they are, they're like, get the sheep. And I'm like, yeah, like, you're like, no, just grab a sheep. And I'm like, I don't know where to grab them. Like, can we start with like a carrot or something? And they're like, no, just grab a sheep. So I gotta like grab this sheep by the neck, and I bring him in here, and I bring my son down, and I put him on the sheep, and then I like realize that like this is like a moment for us. and then I think like I'm probably supposed to like give technique here, or like, here's how you do it. And I don't know. I think I've never ridden a sheep before in my life. And so I'm just like, hug it. Hug it hard. Anyways, that really has nothing to do with anything except for we risk too little, right? Like, that's such a like silly example of like, it could have been like, no, I don't want little Billy to get hurt, you know, or something. And like, my son learned so much from that little experience, and he wanted to do it. And there are things that we are afraid of as parents, and so we don't allow our kids to experience some things, when really we need to let our kids experience some things. Like, we need to let our kid fall off their bike. Right, did you know now there's actually an electronic brake you can put on your child's bike to where the parent can remotely stop the bike while the kid's driving around? Like, that's the culture we're living in right now. Right? We risk too little. We rescue too quickly. This is a really important one. We rescue too quickly, and we rescue for stupid stuff. We rescue for stupid stuff. Your kid getting a C in English class is okay. It's okay. Like, your kid getting a demerit at school, there might be some character things there, but like, he got a demerit at school. Like, your desire to go to the school and to say, no, my kid didn't do that. Where's the video proof? Do you have video of my kid pushing this kid? Because my kid said he didn't push this kid. And we get this whole narrative, and all you're trying to do is protect your kid from some adversity, when that adversity is probably the best thing developmentally for your kid. Justified or not justified, it's probably the best thing, faith formation wise and human development wise, for your kid. But we rescue too quickly.
You ever make that speech to a parent?
No, I haven't, but I do hear. So
I just wondered how it went.
Yeah. So, but you know what? I say that I have, and we've had the conversations. Gabe can testify to this. So he experiences it every day with people, just, you know, wanting to protect their kids, right? And it's this pent up desire to be an advocate for your kid, and we think advocate as a positive thing. Right, but sometimes our advocacy hinders human development, and so we kind of have to keep that in check. So we rant too easily. This is a bad one. We rant too easily in front of our children. We also rant too easily in social media, and so some of our kids that are older can probably start seeing some of that stuff, or they will see some of that stuff. But we rant too easily, and here's the deal: as adults, I'll just take Brian Plum. Brian Plum's a good friend and a great youth minister, probably one of the best youth ministers in the country. Brian Plum's going to do something stupid sometime. And Brandon Tatum's going to do something stupid as president of his school sometime. And I'm going to make a mistake. And Brian's going to make a mistake. And if you're a parent and you know that, as soon as you say something negative about that
and your child hears you, you just cut so many chances for Brian to reach your kid, or that teacher to reach your kid, or that other adult to reach, you know. So we have to be really careful about ranting in front of our kids, and we reward too frequently. It's the last one. And this is one that has actually got a lot of press in the last decade or so, kind of the trophy generation you've seen. My wife was a terrible gymnast and is still a terrible gymnast and was never a good gymnast. But when she was six, she went to gymnastics. And she was the only kid on her gymnastics team to not get a trophy. And somehow her parents knew that she was so bad that she would be the only one to not get a trophy. So her dad bought a trophy and gave it to her when they got out to the car, like super sweet thing, right? And my wife is so messed up because of that. She's just awful, you know? No, but we just have that innate desire, like, for our kid to be happy. We want him to be happy. I gotta go really fast here. Spirituality. Gen Z students are at least twice as likely as American adults to identify as LGBTQIA. Is it acceptable for someone to be born? This is Barna Group research. Is it acceptable for someone to be born one gender and feel like another? You see a lot in the definitely and probably area. The only reason I like to show this is because when I was a kid, not that long ago, this would have never been thought to be asked on a survey. Just show cultural changes. Like, this is actually being asked to kids. And they're seeing it every day. I mean, they're seeing identity stuff all of the time. And when we get into the parenting theology stuff, one of the questions that I like to ask is, how much are we talking about them being made in the image of God? Like, as a church, as a parent, like, how often are we using image of God language? How often are we pouring into our kids' identity, like in technical, like, we're going to talk about who you are? We're not doing it a lot, and culture's doing a lot of it, right? And so this is one of the areas when I say cultural influences and all that from the beginning, like, there is some formation going on, and there is a difference between generational outcomes and psychosocial development. And what I mean by that is psychosocial development is at certain life stages, every kid for every generation is having to experience certain things. So from 12 to 18 years old, from that life stage, for every generation, they've had to figure out sexual and occupational identity. That's Eric Erickson psychology, right? So every generation. But now when you're in 12 to 18 and you're trying to figure out sexual identity and you're living in a culture like this, that all of a sudden gets a little bit more confusing, right? So that complicates the generational stuff. Teens 13 to 18 years old are twice as likely as adults to say they are atheists right now. This is all Barna research, the newest Barna research. Half say happiness is their ultimate goal in life, 51%. Happiness is their ultimate goal in life, which 100% of parents would say happiness is their goal for their children. So there's some interesting stuff there. Only 9% of Generation Z are engaged Christians. Engaged Christians are the only faith segment likely to say faith is central to their identity. And few teens overall see spiritual maturity as worthy ambition. One quarter of Gen Z strongly agrees that what is morally right and wrong changes over time based on society, and they are nearly on par with millennials in believing each individual is his or her own moral character. We're going to talk a lot about this through this quarter. A lot about moral, where we come up with our morals and truth, and where do we find truth and what is truth. We're going to talk about that. 3 out of 5 among the eldest generation strongly agree that lying is immoral, while only 1/3 of Gen Z believes lying is wrong.
Only about 1 in 4 among all Gen Z believe science and the Bible are complementary. We're going to spend time on this. This is an interesting one. When we talk about faith and science, we're going to spend quite a bit of time here too. More than 1/3 of Generation Z believes it is not possible to know for sure if God is real. We're also going to spend a lot of time here. This is what we're going to do predominantly in the Pixar generation conversation. The question that our kids are asking right now predominantly when it comes to faith from 6th grade to 12th grade are real questions. Is God real? Is this Bible real? Did the miracles actually happen? Creation happened the way I've been told creation happened. Like, they're just like picking apart all of these things, and they're just like, this just doesn't make sense with what we know. We're going to spend a lot of time on that. Nearly half of teens on par with millennials say, I need factual evidence to support my beliefs. This is kind of going back to that. 46%, which helps to explain their uneasiness with the relationship between science and the Bible. This is a study that I have done. 2,000 students from 6th grade to 12th grade were asked, do you feel closely connected to God? And the interesting finding that we pulled from this was from 6th grade to 12th grade, they're closely connected to God. The feeling of being closely connected to God decreased over time. Decreased over time from 6th grade to 12th grade. So I have picked this thing apart with many people. A lot of youth ministers, a lot of Christian educators, preachers, faculty. And I think the biggest reason for this, and we're going to spend a lot of time here on the parenting theology, is our lack of expectations for kids. Like, our faith expectation between a 6th grader and a 12th grader shouldn't be, well, in 6th grade, you get to go to a mission trip in Tulsa, and in 12th grade, you go to a mission trip in Nicaragua. It needs to be more significant faith expectations for our kids to actually bear God's image in the world, like today, as an 8th grader. So, here's what Generation Z does care about. This is interesting. They care about starting a career. They care about financial independence. And they care about professional and educational achievement. Okay, why does that matter? Well, we'll talk about this, why this matters, specifically connected to human development and psychology and Genesis chapter 1. But we should know what kids care about, so we can help form them in ways that are beneficial to them by using the things they care about, right? So we need to be helping our kids. Like, if you have a high schooler right now and they want to be a physical therapist, you need to be connecting them to a physical therapist that's a Christian, and he's being a Christian as a physical therapist. Like, he's actively engaged in his faith at work. That's what you should be doing with your 13-year-old. If you want to form them. Financial independence makes a lot of sense, because this is one of those cultural outcomes, that this is a generation that did live through a financial crisis. I did not live through a financial crisis. When I chose a college, I wanted one that had the best rec center. Like, you got a coffee shop and a rec center, I'm there, right? Generation Z, when they're looking at college, they're like, what's my debt? Am I going to get a job? What's the job going to pay? Like, they're asking very practical financial questions, because they watched parents get laid off. They watched older siblings go to college and not get a job, right? And then professional educational achievement, because it makes sense here. But they're just things that we need to know what they like, so we can connect that to their formation. I like this quote. This is, again, Ellen Page. This is how she kind of ends her article. Oh, parents, parents everywhere. Point out to us the ideals of truly glorious and upright living. Believe in us, that we may learn to believe in ourselves, in humanity, in God. Be the living examples of your teachings, that you may inspire us with hope and courage, understanding and truth, love and faith. Remember that we are the parents of the future.
Help us to be worthy of the sacred trust that will be ours. Make your life such an inspiration to us that we, in our turn, will strive to become an inspiration to our children and to the ages. Is that too much to ask? This was kind of a negative thing of all these negative statistics. There are some really neat things we can do as families that are different. And my passion stems from researchers and sociologists for 2 decades have been ringing the alarm bells saying our kids are leaving the faith. For 2 decades, well, more than that. Like George Barna of Barna Group, like in the 90s, was his first book talked about this. Right? And then we had Christian Smith, and Almost Christian came out, and his book talked about this. And we got all these sociologists and researchers saying, church, listen and wake up. Parents, listen and wake up. And I haven't seen hardly anything change in 2 decades. Like, our youth ministries look almost the exact same as when we went there. And one of the reasons for that is because we think the way we were formed and the youth ministry we had and the education we had was the way our kids need. And so we fight to protect what we know. Instead of saying, you know what, y'all are the experts. I trust you. This is a new generation. This is a new kid. Help me form faith into my child. And it might be different. Right? So that's what I want to talk about. What we haven't seen in the research is how can we do things differently? How do we, this is very specific, and this is going to be very uncomfortable for a lot of people. How do we teach Scripture different to our kids? Because the way I was taught Scripture from a Church of Christ preacher growing up lands on deaf ears with a 13-year-old. They can't process it. And there's reasons for that. We're going to talk about that. And half of you are not going to ever come back to this class. But I think it's really exciting and I'm really passionate about it. I think we have got to start doing things differently and we have to be okay with it. Let's watch this last video.
I am part of a lost generation and I refuse to believe that I can change the world. I realize this may be a shock, but happiness comes from within is a lie and money will make me happy. So in 30 years, I will tell my children they are not the most important thing in my life. My employer will know that I have my priorities straight because work is more important than family. I tell you this, once upon a time, families stayed together. But this will not be true in my era. This is a quick fix society. Experts tell me 30 years from now, I will be celebrating the 10th anniversary of my divorce. I do not concede that I will live in a country of my own making. In the future, environmental destruction will be the norm. No longer can it be said that my peers and I care about this earth. It will be evident that my generation is apathetic and lethargic. It is foolish to presume that there is hope. And all of this will come true unless we choose to reverse it. There is hope. It is foolish to presume that my generation is apathetic and lethargic. It will be evident that my peers and I care about this earth. No longer can it be said that environmental destruction will be the norm. In the future, I will live in a country of my own making. I do not concede that 30 years from now, I will be celebrating the 10th anniversary of my divorce. Experts tell me this is a quick fix society, but this will not be true in my era. Families stayed together once upon a time. I tell you this, family is more important than work. I have my priorities straight because my employer will know that they are not the most important thing in my life. So in 30 years, I will tell my children, money will make me happy is a lie, and true happiness comes from within. I realize this may be a shock, but I can change the world. And I refuse to believe that I am part of a lost generation.
I think we have a generation of kids that are going to be do amazing things. And I think they are desperately seeking justice in our world. I think they are desperately seeking what's right and what's good. And they want to be active in their faith. But they are living in a culture that is not empowering them to live out their faith. So I'm excited about this course. I think there's a lot of things we're going to be able to talk about very specifically. Let me pray for us and we can go. God, thank you so much for this church and being able to spend a Wednesday night talking about our kids. God, we know that Deuteronomy 6 rings true today, and that we need to be talking about you all the time. When we walk along the road and when we get up and when we lie down, we need to be posting your scriptures and your words all over our houses and our door frames. And God, we need to be very intentional in the raising of our children from a faith-formative perspective. We know that you've given us that responsibility, and we don't take that lightly. God, I ask that you give us all a humble spirit, and that we allow you to work through us on a daily basis, God. Thank you so much for the gift of your Son and the grace and love and mercy that he's given to all of us in here. And I pray all this in your name. Amen. Thank you all.